Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
A few weeks ago, I started working as a janitor at a research facility just outside of town. It was just a quick, easy job to earn some extra pocket money before school started again. That was, until I started witnessing strange things. And today, I found something that I'm sure shows they're experimenting on humans. I don't know. I suppose I should just tell you all everything that had happened so far. Even during the interview, I waited around in the lobby and noticed how deadly silent it was. I didn't even want to breathe, since I felt as if I would draw all the eyes in the room on me. I was sitting on this rock-hard plastic chair, uneasily shifting as the natural anxiety of the job interview carved a pit in my stomach. Trying the tactic of taking notes of things you could see, hear, feel, smell, taste, I scanned my eyes around the room. The dim hum of overhead fluorescent lights and whirling of ceiling fans caught my attention first. The lights were giving me a headache. Then, I sneakily took a look at the other people in the room. There were 3 others, 2 men and a woman. They were all older than me, maybe 60 or 70, graying hair and wizened skin. But they all seemed unusually frail, their skin draping from their bones like their flesh had been suctioned out. And it was so quiet. I couldn't even name more than 3 things I could hear. The lights, the fan, my heartbeat. I couldn't even focus on the other senses. I was too distracted by these people. None of the others were looking anywhere but the shiny vinyl flooring, a somewhat vacant expression behind glazed eyes. They were sat multiple seats apart, but all united with the exact same expression of resignation? Sadness? I'm not really sure. But it made me feel unsettled, like they knew something I didn't. After a few more minutes, a woman draped in a white lab coat and professional-looking attire poked her head through the door. "June Collins?" she called out, glancing up from her clipboard, her eyes searching the room until she eventually noticed the old woman standing up. She smiled warmly towards her and led the hobbling woman through the door. The 2 men didn't look up. It took another 20 minutes or so for anything else to happen. A different door opened, and a man spoke out this time. He called out my name, and I followed him through to a tiny concrete box of a room with nothing more than a metal table and chairs. The interview went fine. He introduced himself as, I don't think I should say his name. Dr. Smith will do. That's vague enough. He asked the basic questions of why I wanted to work there, what I did in my free time, where I saw myself in a few years. I just answered with fancy-sounding phrases I had prepared the night before, and I got the job. There wasn't anything else of note that day. Dr. Smith let me go home, and I didn't really think about the 3 other people in the waiting room again. My first few days went okay. I would just put my headphones in and quietly clean the building all day. There was a rule I had to follow, though. If I were to go down into the basement to pick up cleaning supplies, I would have to get Dr. Smith to follow me. I didn't really know why, until maybe the fifth day. It was an awkwardly quiet elevator ride down, a gentle lull of calming music easing the tension. I assumed it was my fault that the mood felt so strained, since I'm terrible at speaking to strangers, and I feel like I radiate some kind of, "this girl is uncomfortably awkward to talk to, do not approach her," force field. However, I ended up noticing how stressed Mr. Smith always looked during that elevator trip. He's not that old, maybe 30 or so, but the lighting in the elevator highlighted every dent and wrinkle in his skin, casting deforming shadows onto his features that twisted his face into an obscured, sagging malformation. He always stands stiffly and tightly, clenching his fists, repeatedly darting his eyes to the little LED screen that displayed the floor, as if desperate for the ride to be over. It only began to make sense on that particular day. Like usual, I made my way towards the cleaning cart, but noticed that the bleach was empty. Mindlessly, I did a quick scan of the room and saw a spare resting on the shelf in a darker part of the room. I made my way towards the shadowy abyss, but just as I was about to grab it, the silence was shattered by a shrill screeching right beside me, alongside the grating sound of rattling metal. I flinched away and made this humiliating wobbly yelping noise. Dr. Smith soon came jogging over from the elevator. Once I turned, I saw that there was a cage on the shelf next to me, as well as tiny wrinkled hands and a furry face with bared rows of teeth thrashing inside the metallic cage. There was a monkey inside. Maybe it was a monkey, I don't know. Some sort of small ape thing, and it was furious. It howled and screeched as it clenched the bars and shook the entire structure, hissing at me as if it wanted nothing more than to shred my face apart. It continued to writhe in pure rage, only for Dr. Smith to start laughing calmly beside me, patting my shoulder in a friendly manner. "Oh, you scared me," he chuckled lightheartedly. I was frozen in shock, but he couldn't have been more impassive about the shrieking creature in front of him. He barely even raised his voice to be heard over it, and I could only just about hear him as he spoke. "That's Isaac. Don't worry about him. He's just shy." Isaac, this wailing creature, continued to violently shake the cage and scream at me, eventually resulting in banging his fist against the cage and even slamming his entire body up against it over and over. He just wouldn't stop, I thought. I began desperately trying to regulate my breathing. "I thought you weren't allowed to experiment on animals anymore." "What?" Dr. Smith exclaimed, furrowing his eyebrows concernedly and crunching his face in disgust as he quickly shook his head. No, dear. You got it all wrong. Isaac's a friend." My eyes slowly wandered from the screeching monkey to Dr. Smith, who was already ignoring the creature as he brushed off his suit and turned on his heels back towards the elevator without another word. I didn't even know what I was supposed to say in that situation, what I was supposed to ask him. It already took a great effort for me to speak up in any situation, and by the time I had summoned the mental courage to talk, he was already standing inside the elevator, giving me a brief wave as the metal doors slid shut. I was a little confused as to why he left, since I had never been alone in the basement before, but I didn't want to spend any longer down here than I had to. I let out a wobbly exhale and turned to grab the bleach and leave. When I turned, Isaac had stopped screaming. It was so sudden that it almost startled me as much as when he had started screaming and thrashing around. Instead of wildly flinging his arms and legs around, he just stopped. He had stopped screaming, stopped moving. He was now standing up straight with a tall, stiff posture and his short arms hanging at his sides. Human-like. He had this blank stare on his face. His black closet-set eyes with a ring of hazel and a pinpoint pupil remained fixed on me as he stared with a void, wide-eyed expression.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
It's like when models in a video game glitch out and revert back to their default pose, you know? I must have been standing there for minutes on end, basically shitting myself as the monkey standed up straight and just silently stared at me after acting insane a second ago. Eventually, I realized that I just had to leave. I was already on the verge of tears. As if trying to break free from solid amber, I managed to rip my feet from their spot on the concrete and stepped back, not wanting to take my eyes off at the monkey as I gathered the cleaning supplies I needed and dumped them onto the cart in a hurry. His eyes followed me around the room, neck craning to ensure he was always looking at me. Once I had everything I needed, I stumbled backwards towards the elevator so that I didn't have my back on him, aimlessly patting the wall behind me until I managed to open the elevator and stumbled into it, repeatedly slamming the close button as the sight was blocked by the doors. I did end up crying in the elevator, but I wiped my tears once the doors reopened to the ground floor and shoved my headphones in, distracting myself with work. The monkey couldn't have been the reason I wasn't allowed in the basement alone, surely, since Dr. Smith had just left me alone with it. I don't know. I feel like I'm losing my mind. You might not understand why seeing some creepy monkey warrants human experiments, but please stay with me. Isaac the monkey was gone after that day, and I couldn't say I was disappointed about it. When I told Dr. Smith about what had happened, he had scuffled at me and said a slow, "Right," in an unimpressed tone, like he thought I was lying. I didn't say anything after that, shutting my mouth in embarrassment. I just thought that if it was one of those creepy self-aware monkeys, the ones you see online that do those things like write or put on clothes, maybe it was playing a prank on me, trying to scare me on purpose. I don't know. The next incident was 3 days later. It happened on the third floor, where I had to wear protective gear like face masks and gloves, since they had handled infectious diseases on that floor. I'd placed some wet floor signs in the empty hallway and was mopping the ground. Even though it was perfectly clean, I was just bored, while listening to music. A couple moments later, I heard this metallic groaning noise from inside a nearby room, like a rusty iron door being pulled open. Taking off my headphones to listen closer, it was still muffled behind the wall, but still loud. I couldn't guess what it was, but it sounded large and withered. Also kind of like the low horn of a ship. Something like that. I propped the mop up against the wall and followed the noise to a sleek metal door that had various bright yellow stickers on it, warning me of all the biohazards contained in the room. I thought that I'd be fine. I thought that if anything were really a hazard in there, they'd have some sort of lock on the door, right? With that, I carefully crept inside, excitedly grinning under my stuffy mask as I saw the room inside. To me, at least, the room was memorizing. Despite the suffocating strong smell of chemicals lingering in the air, I stepped further inside to get a closer look at all of the intricate stations with flashy computers, microscopes, sparklingly clean flasks and tubes piled on top of the glass countertops. The lighting in the room casted an electric blue hue over everything, making the room look like a movie set. I thought it was cool, but I didn't really understand where the biohazard was. There wasn't even anyone else in there. I heard the noise again. It was much louder and clearer, but it still sounded like a deep, rumbling, metallic lamentation. I pinpointed it to the left of me, so I weaved through the rows of modernistic workstations and reached what looked like a garbage chute, a square iron hatch that seemed to lift up with a handle on the bottom. I assumed that this was where the hazard was, since the hatch was also drowned in red and yellow warning stickers. One peek wouldn't hurt. Checking either side of me to ensure that nobody was watching, I gently lifted the hatch open. As I did, I heard the sound again, and it was clear that it was traveling up the concrete tunnel from somewhere down below. I think it was because I thought that I was alone that I ended up leaning forward and sticking my head into the chute in order to see what was down there. It wasn't what, it was who. Limbs sprawled out and pressed against the walls of the chute to keep itself propped up. A man seemed to be stuck midway through the chute, a few meters below me. I didn't really process what I was seeing for several seconds. I just stared at the back of the man's head as he looked down the chute. I could tell he was old, with thinning white hair and a spotty head underneath. His arms and legs were so withered that he looked like nothing more than a skeleton wearing tailored skin. I was surprised that they didn't snap holding up the way to him. I could also hear an unintelligible distant discussion below the man, not so heated that it was an argument, but not calm enough to be a casual conversation. Before I even realized it was happening, however, the man slowly craned his neck up to make dead eye contact with me. I don't know why exactly, but I almost expected him to have the same expression I saw in the other people in the waiting room, as well as the monkey. Instead, his mouth was hanging open, kinda like he didn't have any feeling in his jaw and he couldn't close it. His gaping mouth was entirely black, void-like. He didn't have any teeth. He didn't have a tongue. I couldn't even see his throat, just darkness. Then he made the noise I had been hearing. I think I screamed, but honestly, I can't remember. I was likely too horrified to do anything. All I remember is the feeling of my heart sinking in the abrupt terror of his limbs suddenly moving, like when a spider suddenly crawls towards you after thinking it was dead. At a nightmarish speed, the man began to scuttle up the chute and towards me with a hostile desperation to reach me. I immediately retracted my head from the hatch and slammed it down, backing away as I continued to hear the muffling scramble of his arms and legs, growing closer as he rapidly clambered his way up the chute. In case he managed to open the hatch from inside, I darted back towards the door, even bumping into one of the workstations and almost knocking a few empty glasses to the ground. When I reached the door, I flung it open to see Dr. Smith standing there, panting as if he had just sprinted there. "What on earth were you thinking?" he demanded. I didn't realize it then, but I'm now wondering how he even knew what was happening. It had been seconds when I had my head in that chute, and there he was. "What was that?" I trembled. My limbs felt cold and numb, like my blood had been replaced with icy adrenaline. Frantically, I kept checking behind me to the hatch, fully expecting the man to crawl out of it and bound towards me. "Look, it's..." Dr. Smith stopped himself and exhaled, pinching the bridge of his nose out of stress. "We try to keep dangerous patients below ground, so as not to scare employees like you, that's all." "Dangerous patients?" I repeated, utterly lost.
"Rabies,"
he hurriedly stated, as if that was supposed to clear up all of my questions. He must have noticed the blank, baffled look on my face, so he continued. "We're working on developing better treatment for the disease, so hospitals sends rabies patients to us for examinations and observation." It was in the news, actually. You should have known that already.
"That guy has rabies?"
Dr. Smith nodded, but refused to meet my eye. He kept looking everywhere but at me. Over his shoulder, behind me. He seemed to be stifling his nerves, which didn't help me feel any better about the situation. I think he was worried that someone would see us or was hasty to leave the conversation, but I'm not entirely sure why. He chewed through his restraints and was trying to escape, I imagine. But try not to worry. He's kept downstairs for a reason. It's safe up here, I promise. I don't think I managed to hide the growing anxiety on my face. But it didn't matter anyway, since Dr. Smith wasn't even looking anywhere near me. It's safe to say that I didn't believe him now after the most recent incident, but at the time, it made sense to me. Plus, we have a tendency as human beings to blindly trust authority. As some teenage janitor, who was I to question the man in a white coat with a PhD? I didn't know any better, so I assumed that he was telling the truth, and I avoided that floor from then on. I didn't speak when I went home that night. My parents asked me how my day was, and I simply walked straight past them into my bedroom, locking the door and not leaving until the morning for work. I skipped dinner and breakfast. I didn't even leave to use the bathroom or to brush my teeth. I only thought he was a rabies patient that had been sent in for treatment. Something about him disturbed me to my core. I laid awake that night with his face burnt into my mind like a scalding hot iron. The sound of him skirling up that chute haunted me. Finally, we reached today. I had somewhat recovered from the event after a week or so, but I still refused to go back to that floor. Pushing the thought out of my mind seemed to work, so my life carried on. Honestly, I never even told anyone about it until now, since Dr. Smith had somehow convinced me that there was nothing to tell, that it was a well-known fact that they treated rabies patients. I almost felt like I was in trouble for what I saw, so I kept it quiet, like I was keeping my own secret instead of his. Anyways, earlier today, I was in the woman's bathroom on the sixth floor, kneeling underneath a sink and scrubbing the porcelain, rethinking all my life choices that led me to that point. I had music blasting in my ears and was quietly humming along, until I heard the door quietly creaking, like someone was trying to sneak in. I flinched slightly, feeling embarrassed that I had been caught humming, and whipped my head around to see who was coming in. I assumed that they didn't want to interrupt me or something, so I paused before nervously calling out, "You could come in, I'm just cleaning." There was no answer, but the door was open a crack, as if someone was cautiously waiting outside. I'll leave, I'm sorry," I said, guessing that whoever was waiting was uncomfortable using one of the stalls while I was in there. With that, I quickly gathered all of my cleaning supplies around me onto the cart and brushed myself off as I stood up. When I turned to head towards the door, I stopped in my tracks, frozen with the sudden shock of what I was seeing. That frickin' monkey. There it was, standing upright, no taller than a foot or so. It might not even be Isaac. I wouldn't have been able to tell from the appearance alone. But the way it stood there was directly reminiscent of when it was in the cage the other day. Now, however, it was blocking the door. Just stood there motionless, staring at me with such human vacancy in its eyes. I felt the acute sense of vulnerability as the creature glared at me with wide pupils. I didn't know what it was thinking. I don't even know if monkeys do that. I was completely paralyzed other than the violent shaking in my hands. The room felt hot and cramped, painfully contrasting with the ice-cold blood rushing through my veins. I'd heard the stories of monkeys or chimpanzees or whatever brutally mauling people, and images of the creature clawing away at my face flashed in my mind as I stared back. My chest tightened as if my ribcage was closing in on my lungs, just like the claws of a claw clip tangled up in my hair. It only moved its mouth. It was so gradual and achingly slow that I didn't even notice it was opening until it was already slightly ajar. Wider and wider, so unbearably slow, until eventually its jaw was gaping. It was black. No teeth, no tongue, no throat. A pitch black hole like its mouth was yet another pupil. I was already crying, already on the brink of throwing up. I thought that I was about to pass out. Looking back, it was only a tiny thing, and I probably could have kicked it away if it came any closer. But in that moment, I was beyond petrified. It didn't come any closer, though. It remained wide-eyed, mouth immensely agape, and completely static for a moment longer, until it suddenly dropped down onto all fours. I let out a brief scream and stumbled backwards since I thought it was going to come bounding towards me. But it instead made some sort of chirping noise and started biting at something on its fingers. It then climbed up onto one of the bathroom stalls, tail hanging and head curiously looking around the room, blinking and breathing. Normal. I didn't let myself stay in that room for any longer. I rushed towards the door as it perched on the stall and paid no attention to me at all, simply acting how you would expect any monkey to act. Once I was outside, I slammed the door shut and scrambled for the keys in my pocket, shakily locking the bathroom shut. I needed to go find Dr. Smith and tell him that the monkey had escaped, so I made a beeline for his office, which was luckily already on that floor. The wooden door, a harsh juxtaposition to the rest of the soulless industrial structure, was shut, so I hurriedly knocked. Nothing. I knocked again, clearly conveying my urgency in the franticness of the banging. Still, nothing. I wasn't in my right mind. I was convinced that he must be in there and that I needed help. I don't know. I think the fact the entire floor was empty and devoid of life was stressing me out even more. I let out an exasperated exhale and decided to use the master key I had been given to go inside. I had been warned against using the key for unauthorized areas, such as offices, but I wasn't thinking about that then. I think I was having some sort of panic attack. It was the most awful thing I had ever experienced. I genuinely thought I was about to go into cardiac arrest and drop dead. The key, to my surprise, slotted into the lock with a satisfying click, and I was able to open the door to Dr. Smith's office. It was messy, like he wasn't expecting anyone but himself to see it, an ocean of papers and files completely covering his desk, as well as three old coffee mugs lying around discarded. The empty swivel chair was sticking out in the angle as if he had left in a hurry, and I noticed that one of the filing cabinets behind the desk was hanging open, a padlock dangling off the handle. The more I looked, the more apparent it came that he had rushed out for some reason. I wondered if that was why everyone else was gone. The thought that they all knew something that I didn't only further sharpened my unstinting anxiety. The open filing cabinet caught my eye most, especially the padlock that had been recently unlocked.
I had to, didn't I?
You can't tell me you wouldn't do the same if you were me. I knew I shouldn't have, but I approached it as if it was going to attack me too, peering inside to see nothing but a singular piece of paper lying flat at the bottom. I reached inside and flipped it over. It was all typewritten, which I had never actually seen before in real life. I read on in curiosity, and well, I found myself throwing up in the trash can underneath his desk moments later. I had to get out of there after that. I know it was stupid, but I kept the piece of paper in my hand as I rushed out of the building. I didn't see anybody on the way out either. Usually I would take the bus home, but since it was in the middle of the day and I wasn't going to wait around any longer, I walked miles back to my house. My legs were burning, and a sheen of sweat was drenching my entire body, but I hardly even noticed. I dragged my sore body up to my bedroom and slumped down against my bed, feeling the smallest amount of relief at the cool sensation of the hardwood floor. That's when I reached for my laptop and began to write this. I suppose I should share what was written on the paper, but I'm honestly terrified. I've been considering the possibility that maybe I'm just insane, that I somehow hallucinated all of it. I don't know. I don't even know if this is sane what I think it's sane, if I'm about to get sued for sharing this. I haven't said the name of the company, have I? I can't get in trouble for this. I don't know. I feel sick. I'm looking at the paper now, and I want to throw up again. I'm sure that I wasn't supposed to see this. I think that this slipped out of a file and Dr. Smith accidentally left it behind. Maybe he was trying to dispose of it. That makes sense, I think. Maybe I'm just overreacting. I don't know. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm rambling. I'm just gonna type it up and put this out there. I don't know what to do. I'm losing my mind. I feel really sick. Anomaly Log 7286-015. Date February 16th, 2021. Name Dr. Isaac Hughes. Subject 7286. Age 73. Sex, male. Height, 5'8". Weight, 106 pounds. DOA, August 7th, 2017. Report. Since its arrival 4 years ago, 7286 has been making staggering progress. I, along with Williams and Robinson, have been discussing disposing of it due to its lack of activity. I believe it has been much more aware than we first imagined. It has likely been pretending to be inert to avoid experimentation, and is only now operating to save its life. For the first time in all of our research, we have discovered signs of emotion amongst them. Furthermore, 7286 spoke today. I was alone in the facility with just Goodnight and 7286. Goodnight and I had music playing, specifically Moonglow by Artie Shaw, while we listened, typing up our reports for the day, when 7286 spoke and asked what song we were listening to. Neither of us knew that they could speak until now. However, its voice did not sound perfect, almost computer-generated, and it struggled with correct sentence structure. It sounded a lot like Robinson to me, though I can't be certain. I believe Goodnight conducted somewhat of an interview with it. That should be filed in log 7286-014. End log.